Welcome to Roots in Medicine, a podcast that explores the intersections of race, science, and spirituality. I'm your host, Rebecca Rogers. On today's episode, we will be exploring how drinking your water and minding your business can help lower your blood pressure. First up, Supreme Aunt Sour Cream. Supreme Aunt Sour Cream is a segment where we explore how white supremacist ideals continue to be perpetuated within medicine and culture. When I was in college, I found out about something called the slavery hypertension hypothesis, which basically states that Black people in America have disproportionately high levels of hypertension because of a genetic mutation that allowed them to retain salt more than others. The hypothesis goes on to be like, because of the living conditions aboard the Middle Passage and during slavery in general, slaves didn't have as much access to water. They didn't have as much access to the nutrients that they needed. So natural selection may have just favored people who were able to retain water more effectively. The easiest way to retain water is to retain salt in the way our kidneys work. And so the became a hypothesis that there was a genetic mutation that specifically allowed Black people to retain more salt than other people. The biggest two things that when I was a young college student, I didn't even think about is one, should normal blood pressure be the same for everybody? There is a drastic difference between what it is to be average and what it is to be normal. And when we interchange the two, it really creates a big difference in our ability to provide effective and equitable care to all when we are all standardizing one thing as being normal when there are just certain variations in the population. The second thing is that there's a lot of other factors, especially like this magical hormone called cortisol, the stress hormone, that also greatly impacts your blood pressure. And the slavery hypertension hypothesis says nothing about cortisol. So maybe that has something to do with it. So to answer my first question, obviously the answer is no. Everybody is not the same normal, but everybody doesn't even know what their own normal is. So then doctors have to come up with something. And so we have to come up with the average. And if a patient or a person does not know what their own individual normal would be, doctors have to default to what the average, quote unquote, or the normal value that the majority of patients who are seen, this is the average of all of their numbers. So we call this the average normal. So if you don't have an awareness of what your own normal is in comparison to what they state is normal, you have no idea when you are going to be normal or abnormal. And so a lot of our diagnosis of whether or not somebody even has hypertension is based on something being normal versus abnormal. And so if everyone's normal is different, then we can't say everyone has hypertension at the same number because somebody's normal might be where somebody else has hypertension. So if we're going to actually give equitable, individualized care, people have to be a lot more engaged with their awareness of their bodies than they desire to be, which is why doctors have to do some of the things that they have to do, when honestly, they know it's not the best care anyways either. They just literally have no other option. They don't want you to die, so there we are. So then to my second point, there's definitely a lot of studies that are showing that there is a relationship between cortisol and hypertension. The problem is that we often wait for a peer-reviewed, well-researched paper to come out before we state anything. And it's very obvious that stress increases your blood pressure, regardless of if we know the mechanism by which it happens. We don't need to wait for the research to catch up to what is just common sense. Almost every single religion covers some discussion about reducing your stress and anxiety, which makes me believe there is a huge reason we need to actually have a broader discussion about what role stress and anxiety play in our ability to live as humans. The next segment, It's Not Rocket Science, is where I introduce a scientific concept, then break down how it applies specifically within the human body. But before we go and explore how and why these religions might have included discussions about reducing stress and anxiety, let's explore how stress and anxiety may lead to you having an increased blood pressure in the first place on It's Not Rocket Science. When you have a normal value, that is directly related to who you are. Your normal is your normal. Was the normal that you had at birth the same normal that you had at 10, the same normal that you had at 25? Probably not. But like, how does your normal change? What types of things would make your normal change? And once you're 25, is that going to be the same normal that you have at 45? What other things could happen? So we all can anticipate that as our body literally grows, as we get older, going from a baby to becoming an adult, our body is changing size. So we can anticipate that our blood pressure is going to change. However, once our body has, for the most part, stopped changing size, what is making these blood pressure changes happen so much more? One part of this is something called allostatic load. Allostatic load is basically your body sets a specific normal and it tries to stay at that normal. So then if you experience an unfamiliar environment for a short period of time, your body will adapt to the situation, but it's going to go back to the normal that it had created previously as soon as you're gone from that situation. So as soon as you're back to a calm environment, your body will go back and reset what was that normal that it was at before you experienced the unfamiliar environment. However, the amount of adaptations your body is making to establish normal is the allostatic load. So if you have to just make one adjustment, you have a very low allostatic load to be able to adapt to the unfamiliar environment. If you have to make 15 adjustments to adapt to the unfamiliar environment, you have a very high allostatic load because of how much unfamiliarity you are having to adapt to. And the amount of cortisol that your body is creating is directly related to what your body establishes as normal. So if your body decides, okay, I need to adapt in one way to this unfamiliar situation, but it's short-lived, your body will release a short amount of cortisol just while you're in that experience. And as soon as your body is aware that this is no longer a threatening situation, that cortisol will reduce. If you have 15 things that are making you have to adapt, then you're going to have a much higher spike of cortisol than other people would. Now, the problem comes in when that spike doesn't go back down. And this is when we start to have something called epigenetic stress, when it starts to actually impact your genes. So if your body is used to having a lot of cortisol in order to adapt, it's gonna start to believe that having a lot of cortisol is normal. And so then it sets that as the normal set point. So if you're stressed once every 2 weeks, your body is not going to feel stress is normal. So when you are in a state of stress, your body is going to react as it was designed to react. However, as soon as that stress becomes a daily, an hourly, a minutely, a consistent experience of you, your body is going to feel that that excess cortisol is necessary at all times for you to be able to thrive and live. And so even in situations that do not require you to adapt as much, even in situations that are not as threatening, you are still going to have an increased cortisol level compared to other people because your body has reset that as normal. Contrast to that, research is also showing that some adapt to stressful situations by reducing their cortisol levels. So we can't say that every time all people are always going to have a cortisol spike. That is just generally what we have experienced. But it suggests that, as I was stating previously, there's nothing universal about adapting to a problem. everybody's normal is going to be different, and it is based on who you are, both creation and the way that you experience life. So research is also showing that there is a correlation between perception of experiences as traumatic and a patient's actual cortisol level. But there's still variations within this pattern. So you can't say that the same threat is going to cause every single person to spike in the same manner. It's going to be varied depending upon the person. And so now studies are really trying to differentiate between types of trauma so they can better understand how the immune system and cortisol levels specifically are impacted differently with different types of trauma, where if we're just saying, oh, all people who are exposed to any trauma are going to have a cortisol spike, now we are trying to fine tune it and be more specific with what we are saying in terms of the research that we're doing to be able to actually find correlation and potentially even find a causation. And while race itself is likely not a genetically determining factor in a person's experience with health, the interconnectedness between race and socioeconomic status in America deserves further investigation of reasons for observed differences. Food or Medicine for Thought is a segment where I explore how scientific concepts help explain our spiritual experiences. You may be asking yourself, okay, you mentioned the separating types of trauma, but what are those separated types of trauma? And I'm glad you asked, because that is our focus for today's Food or Medicine for Thought. Initially, they decided there's one type of trauma, et cetera, but pediatricians and preventive medicine physicians, as well as some public health advocates in other areas of medicine, are starting to delineate traumatic experiences, specifically the ones that people experienced within childhood, because they're recognizing that those adaptations tend to last throughout adulthood. And there are 10 specific traumatic experiences, otherwise known as adverse childhood experiences, that scientists and researchers have consistently demonstrated give a higher likelihood to having negative health outcomes. The list of negative health outcomes is very expansive, but it includes diabetes, high blood pressure, anxiety, suicidal ideation. The list continues. I'm going to quickly list the 10 adverse childhood experiences that are considered, but I also encourage you all to check the link in the description and take the test for yourself and learn a little bit more about adverse childhood experiences. The first: did a parent or other adult in the household often or very often swear at you, insult you, put you down, or humiliate you? Act in a way that made you afraid you might be physically hurt? Number two, did a parent or other adult in the household often or very often push, grab, slap, or throw something at you? Or ever hit you so hard that you had marks or were injured? Three, did an adult or person at least 5 years older than you ever touch or fondle you or have you touch their body in a sexual way? Or attempt or actually have oral, anal, or vaginal intercourse with you? Number four, did you often or very often feel that no one in your family loved you or thought you were important or special? Or your family didn't look out for each other, feel close to each other, or support each other? Five, did you often or very often feel that you didn't have enough to eat, had to wear dirty clothes, and had no one to protect you? Or your parents were too drunk or high to take care of you or take you to the doctor if you needed it? Were your parents ever separated or divorced? Was your mother or stepmother often or very often pushed, grabbed, slapped, or had something thrown at her, or sometimes, often, or very often, kicked, bitten, hit with a fist, or hit with something hard, or ever repeatedly hit over at least a few minutes, or threatened with a gun or knife? 8. Did you live with anyone who was a problem drinker or alcoholic, or who used street drugs? 9. Was a household member depressed or mentally ill, or did a household member attempt suicide? And 10. Did a household member go to prison? And while that is just a list of 10 traumatic experiences, there may be some experiences that you have had yourself or may have witnessed somebody else experience or have heard about somebody else experience that do not fall on this list. And it is to be acknowledged that while this is a list of 10, it is not exhaustive. There are absolutely things that are not mentioned here that may also impact people's ability to adapt to traumatic situations. And more research is consistently being done to expand this body of work and expand the conversation around this. So when I did this, my ACE score was 0, which I was like, cool, I ain't got nothing to do here. I'm clearly good. But like, why was I still suicidal in medical school? And why do I still need to see a therapist if I have a 0 ACEs score? And so it's also to acknowledge that just because you have an adverse childhood experience doesn't mean that you're about to die tomorrow. And just because you have 0 adverse childhood experiences, it doesn't mean that you're not still going to experience negative things in your life and have to figure out how to adapt. I talk about protecting my inner child in my therapy sessions, but for me, it really was talking about going back when I first felt broken, which was when my boyfriend and I broke up. Like, I had to be ready to go there, though, because it meant having to revisit the emotions. It wasn't something that happened in middle school or high school. It happened in college. It was my first boyfriend. And so having to acknowledge, like, I didn't really get broken until I was 19 also means I have a lot less practice with picking myself up from brokenness than a lot of other people do. I also had to like acknowledge the things that I did wrong, and I had to acknowledge I wasn't always my best self, and had to give myself grace to know that I could be better. I have a lot of difficulty just forgiving myself generally, but I can only improve so much if I do not have the ability to forgive, because I'm always going to come from a space of shame or regret if I don't feel like I actually am empowered to do better. Thankfully, I did a lot of therapy. I did a lot of work, and there was a God-ordained block from Instagram and all of the other options that I got to a place where I felt I could be around him and my blood pressure wasn't going to increase. I absolutely at first would just, the thought of him, I would start sweating, I would get overwhelmed, and I couldn't do anything. But it took a long time, a lot of growth and a lot of work. And I came to a space where my blood pressure wasn't out here spiking just because I thought about him or I saw him. And so remember the whole like slaves retaining salt so they could retain more water? The goal is to be less salty so you don't have to drink as much water. While you're feeling salty, I encourage you to don't just drink water. Find a limitless stream from which you can drink. Some people call this limitless stream self-care. Others may think about a religious experience. To me, it's caring for my future self. I don't necessarily do things for the person that I am right now. I do things because I have love for the person that I want to be later. So I buy a water bottle, but I rarely buy the smallest size. There have been too many times where I have finished a water bottle and I was still thirsty. And out of self-care, I purchase extra just to make sure I don't run out. The same thing has to go for how you approach your self-care in all situations. If I know there was an action that I previously made that caused me to have this specific experience as an outcome, I have to change my future actions accordingly if I don't want to experience that anymore. The more I can adapt to unfamiliar, stressful, or traumatic situations without changing my baseline normal, the calmer I will start to feel and the more empowered I will start to feel to enter unfamiliar, stressful, or traumatic situations. So to get you started, just focus on drinking water. Every time you start to think about something and you feel your blood pressure increase, drink some water. If nothing else, your skin's gonna glow and you'll be so preoccupied thinking about going pee that eventually your brain won't be able to think about anything else. And above all, stay rooted.